the UCR Podcast.
Soundgarden and Chris Cornell fans, I think you're really going to dig this if you're not familiar with it. We are here today to talk about King Ultra Mega, the all-star collective that is something really cool that Mark Mengi of Metal Allegiance has put together to pay tribute to the music of Chris Cornell that he made in his lifetime, both solo and the stuff that he did with Soundgarden and Audioslave. Mark has been releasing music with a variety of guests since last year, including intriguing versions of Audioslave's Be Yourself featuring Joe Satriani, Temple of the Dogs' Say Hello to Heaven with Richie Kotzen and Anthrax's Charlie Benante, and Soundgarden's Rusty Cage featuring William Duvall of Alice in Chains, just to name a few. You can hear and see the videos for all the songs that have come out so far at kingultramega.com. The best part is that this is all for a good cause to help raise funds and awareness of Music Cares, the Recording Academy's nonprofit organization that provides mental health services, addiction recovery services, and emergency assistance to members of the music community. Today, Mark is here with us, and we're also joined by Bron of Mastodon as well, who handles the vocals on a new version of Dead Wishes by Chris Cornell, a beautiful track that originally appeared on Chris's 2015 solo release, Higher Truth. The song also features legendary drummer Kenny Aronoff and some other heavy hitters that we'll talk about. As I said during today's conversation, things like mental health and suicide, we are all affected by it, so I really appreciate the work that Mark and everybody in King Ultra Mega are doing to shine a light and talk about it all so that folks out there know they are not alone. It's Matt Wardlaw again, kingultramega.com. That's where you can go to see more about everything that Mark has been doing. I think you're really going to dig it. And here is our conversation with Mark and Bron. Enjoy.
Maybe we'll tell the infamous Metal Allegiance Chicago Black story fun.
Why don't we start with that, man? We're rolling, so go ahead, man. Tell the story.
I'll let you tell the story, bro.
We did a thing. We played. How long did we play? Hour and a half?
Probably about an hour and a half. We did the what? Which record did we do?
The first record, the whole thing.
Yeah, we did the first record and select cuts from another record, from other various records.
Yeah.
What I remember about that gig was Bron sharpied a beard on his face. That was cool.
Yeah.
I wore a wig.
Yeah, I wore a nice scoop neck leopard print leotard shirt.
Yeah,
and Alex bandana with the long hair, and we tried to get as close to the Bill Ward experience from 1970-71 as possible.
And Alex had the fake porn stash.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it was all good.
It was awesome. Yeah, that was really fun. I just was the opportunity to kind of really dig into those first Black Sabbath songs off of that record and sink my teeth into those, because you know, you think you know a song or you think you know how it goes because you're like, oh yeah, yeah,
no, nope.
You've heard it a million times, but really dissecting it and the drum parts and the genius of Bill Ward, it was really fun to try to, you know, pay tribute to that.
Yeah, what was kind of the most interesting thing that you guys found, like really kind of digging into, because you guys both kind of have experience doing that, you know, Mark obviously 12 billion times over, but I think it's always kind of fun to kind of dig into the music in that way.
You know, with Sabbath, man, you know, Geezer is one of my heroes, right? And not just for the bass playing, but his musicianship, his lyric writing capability, the way he tells a story and deliver, you know, well, then deliver to Oz. And yeah, he's always been an inspiration on many different levels. But when you dig into Sabbath and you really dig in to learn, you know, the music, you know, at least I'm sure Bron's the same way. I dissect the shit out of it, like note for fucking note. And yeah, it's genius, man. And, you know, at least it helps me. You know, every experience I've had, whether it's covering a song or writing or whatever it is, I'm always learning. At least I hope to learn something from it. You know, I always find something where I could learn, whether it's covering Sabbath or even doing all these King Ultra Mega songs. You know, it's funny. I'm really finding myself as a person because, you know, covering Cornell, I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I don't know what, I don't know what planet I was on, but, you know, This is song number six we're releasing, and you really find yourself in doing this. Again, man, covering Cornell is not easy. It's not.
No.
Vocally, musically, whether it's Soundgarden, solo shit, Temple, Audioslave, whatever it might be, there's a lot of layers going on in his music. It might sound simple, but it's definitely very difficult. And even with this newest release, Dead Wishes, a song that sat what I originally thought, man, this is such a cool, mellow, down, just cool tune. I mean, it's funny. People go, man, this song and this record's becoming your Pet Sounds, man. And I just keep hearing this shit going on. And how can I add to it? How can I do things differently? And, enter Bron. He really is, he's the one who took this song to a whole nother level, at least in my opinion. Yeah, that's kind of, covering and whatnot. It brings it back full circle. Sabbath, Cornell. It's, at least for me, I found myself through these experiences.
You gave a good segue to Bron as far as like finding his way into this song, and I want to go there in a second, but just based on what you were talking about, like how everything, I think this is kind of the fascinating thing about music. Everything can sound simple, and then you start digging into it and you find that it's not that. And so the timing that we're having this conversation is very appropriate, and you'll appreciate it because earlier this week I talked to Kim about his memoir, and you haven't gotten the chance to work with Kim on like The Day I Tried to Live. I mean, I went down the rabbit hole in the past couple of weeks, really just submerging myself in the Soundgarden albums. And it's like, and I brought Show and Tell, the Echo of Miles box set.
Nice.
The thing that I found just really kind of going deep into the music is just how fascinating it was. They were a band that were constantly, and Cornell was obviously this way too, but all of them, what I have come to really respect about Soundgarden, which I think you guys would identify with, is that they were all chasing their muse and really not afraid to push the boat far out from the water, no matter where the dock was at any point with what was going on musically, in various genres at the time that they were making music. They were always chasing whatever they wanted to chase. And you hear that in the songs now, like their stuff. And Chris's stuff still holds up, I think, because of that, because they ultimately, collectively and individually, always stayed true to themselves, right?
Yeah, they're one of those, they're one of the main, I think, rock or heavy groups that is so distinctive and original. And, there's unmistakable, obviously, Chris's voice is unmistakable. It's so I think that. It's just lucky those guys got together and met and formed Soundgarden because it's so yeah, they kind of did what they wanted and sort of ignored trends, and they did what what we want our music to do, whereas we want our favorite musicians to stay true to themselves, do their own thing, and always just be honest. But it's not the it's being unique is not an easy thing, and it's not it's just has to happen organically, and I think that Soundgarden is one of the best representations of organically original and unique thing that's just it's that music that you it's an there's an intangible there, like you can't really put your finger on how they arrived at their sound, but thank God they did.
Obviously, bands like Soundgarden that aren't afraid to go for it ultimately pave a certain path that then down the line, whoever it is that hears them, there's all the stuff that you guys listen to that ultimately, eventually, when you're playing music as Mastodon, it's like there are certain things that a band like Mastodon feels more comfortable doing, perhaps, because there are other folks that have kind of gone down that road that have shown, one, it's possible, and two, whatever you're into, whatever you want to go for it. Don't feel like you have to be in a box. And I think that's kind of crucial for a lot of the bands that we have now, that bands like Soundgarden really kind of just put it all out there.
Yeah, you don't have to your inspirations can be very widespread, and you have the ability to pull from any well you want to and just make it your own. And don't be afraid to go down any musical roads for fear of embarrassment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like use your art as a divining rod and follow it wherever, whatever makes you happy, whatever gets you going, whatever is evocative for your own self. And that's all you can really trust, and that's all you should trust. Because that's going to create, or at the end, that's going to be what resonates with people the most. Because if it truly resonated with you, then it will resonate with somebody.
To get really specific, what have you two each kind of individually come to appreciate about this song, Dead Wishes, once you really got to dig into it and really live inside the song?
I know for me, when kind of coming up with a track listing, it was, all right, I'm fucking stupid. I'm going to go down this hall. All right, what are we going to do? And, this was always one of the top for me because this was a song I would always turn to when, if I was after a run, I needed to calm down, wind down, just chill my brain out, just kind of get to a peaceful mental state, if you will. And for whatever reason, this song did that for me. Whether it was the acoustic guitar, the tone, the tone on that acoustic guitar on Chris's track is perfect, right? And then you add Chris's voice into that. It just always brought me to just a calm, happy place. I'm not trying to sound cheesy, but that's what it did for me. So fast forward, when kind of compiling a song list, if you will, this was always on there, but it was always, we tracked it, I tracked it. It was, who the fuck's gonna sing this now, right? Because after every song, it's like, who the fuck is gonna sing this one? Who's doing this? And
Exactly.
I heard Bron's version of Stairway, and I was like, fucking duh. I was like, dude, that's when I hit him. And here we are. And it was, but this song, it means a lot to me as far as on the positive side of things. I know the lyrics aren't particularly positive. It brings me to a positive place, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
It does. Yeah. What about you, Brent?
I'm not going to say that I was super familiar with the song. I had heard it before because my mom was a rabid fan of Chris Cornell, and she really really lo loved his solo stuff. I mean, she was a huge Soundgarden fan back in the day. We both kind of discovered Soundgarden at the same time, like maybe 1990, somewhere around there, 91. But I just remember her listening to this song in particular and being like, wow, it's almost like a bluegrass kind of like a feel to it. But man, Chris's voice, like he can just sing. The guy can sing anything. He's so uber talented, and then he's really going for it on this song, So when Mark hit me up, I went and listened to it, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. Like this is really but I looked at it as a really cool challenge, and I was extremely flattered that he even thought that I could pull it off, but yeah,
You killed it, man. You
like I
killed
said
it.
in the press release, I was like, my knee-jerk reaction was to be like, absolutely not. I do not want to embarrass myself, on purpose. But I was like, you know what? I won't have to sing this and play the drums, so I could, try my hardest to get in the vicinity or the neighborhood of where Chris is with it, So yeah, I just was like kind of welcome to the challenge, and it's really sort of out of my wheelhouse as far as like a song that I would sing, it's really not, but I felt like I could sink my teeth into it, and just do the best I could. I knew that it was for a really great cause, and paying homage to one of my biggest vocal and rock heroes, which I got to meet him. We played shows with Soundgarden. Kim Thayil played a guitar solo on our last album, and so we have a deep admiration and rich history with the Soundgarden guys and Chris. And my mom passed this past February. So I was like, man,
Wow.
mom would be so over the moon about me singing a Chris Cornell song. And so there was a lot of reasons, you know. And also, obviously, my sister committed suicide when she was 14. And so that's always been, you know, the mental health stuff. Anything to help with that is also a big, it's a big thing for me. So everything sort of aligned with all of it. And so I was so stoked that he reached out to me to try my hand at singing.
Yeah, and I was going to ask that. How did you find your way into the song when it came to like approaching what you did on the song vocally? Like, because I talked to Graham Nash recently, and everybody has their own process, but he talked about how he has to put himself into the scenario. He was doing backgrounds on a song on Peter Frampton's new record, and so for him, he said he has to put himself into the headspace of the person he's working with. And as we know, with creatives, everybody has their own process, the way they approach the thing. So how do you find your way into this song and your voice in a way that felt right to you ultimately?
Just naturally, you know, I just gave it all I had, you know, and just sang it over and over again, and would listen back and be like, it's not there yet, you know. And so, you know, and I wanted to, it's always like, for me anyways, I want it to be emotional, you know, so I want to get in there and approach it like an actor almost, you know what I mean, and be a little bit method about it. But immerse myself in, try to go somewhere, but you know, it's a fine line, you know, you don't want to be too emotional, you know, because crying and singing don't mix. But you know, I want to feel it, and I want to deliver that performance, because when you put something like that on tape, then it's like, okay, then you're being honest, you know, and I'm not just going through the motions. Because I never want to do that, and I never want to try to sell something that's not legit, you know. So I make sure that I get to that place where I know that I need to be. But you know, I don't sing a lot of covers, you know what I mean? So for me, it's like lyrics I wrote about something that happened to me or something I'm passionate about. And so obviously it's easier with those kind of situations to get there. But I will say, with this particular song, it being such a beautiful song, and you know, reading the lyrics and kind of, you know, those feelings of regret over things that happened in the past, and I mean, who can't identify with that, especially if you're 51 years old? Those are gonna exist no matter what. But I mean, and then the hope for redemption in the future, and you know, it's a beautiful sentiment, and it's so well written, and it's not hard to get there with this particular song, you know what I mean? And you know, for me, it would have been, like off the top of my head, I would have picked the Soundgarden song probably, you know what I mean? And it maybe would have been maybe a little too like superficial for me, where I would just be trying to do like a mimic, like a cover, you know. But then this just sort of opened up and revealed itself to me. Like, I brought my mom into the scenario, and I brought my sister into the scenario, and so I was way it was way easier for me to get there emotionally with the song while I was performing it than say what I would have normally gone for, something where that I thought was more in my wheelhouse, like an early Soundgarden song or something like that. So I'm really happy that Mark chose this song and then asked me to do it, because yeah, it was different, and it was something that I kind of had to figure out, which I really liked, you know. And I love the song now, and I went and listened to that whole record, and I was like, man, this is a really great hidden gem, you know. I hadn't really dug into that, but I knew my mom like loved it, you know. So it was pretty awesome.
I've become a neurotic mess making this record, right?
I can
Because
see that. I get it.
unlike we Metal Legion just released stuff, a first new song in a while, right? That's easy, right? We riff, we thrash, we do what we do, and cool. This man, I'm fucking questioning everything. I mean, down to, the volume, the EQ, to the strings, to whatever it might be, and I have like these Cornells on my shoulder. They're not angels, they're Cornells. And it's just like, one ear, don't fuck this up. What are you doing? You kind of have to in my mind, passed that test. And like Braun covering Stairway, that's not an easy task, man. You have to have a fucking pair of balls
Oh God, dude, yeah.
to cover that. But they did it fucking beautifully. I mean, beautifully, at least in my opinion. So not only Dead Wishes, but we did Say Hello to Heaven, Rusty Cage, The Day I Tried to Live. We
Yeah.
did Preaching the End of the World off of Euphoria Morning. Though, there's a lot going on in those songs, not just vocally, but instrumentation. How do we make them different? What do you think? And you're going to do an AudioSlave song and not have vocals on it, and then have Joe Satriani fucking mimic the vocals on guitar? Like, what's wrong with you, bro? Right? That's the shit going on in my head. Like, what are you doing? What are you thinking? But to Braun's point earlier, you got to be authentic. And as long as you find a vehicle or that area where you're happy, and you think others will be happy with it, and then that's the time to kind of let it go. But yeah, no, this process is it's made me a little bit fucking neurotic. And even so much so, when doing Dead Wishes, I'm like, Bron, I'm gonna fucking add a string section. I'm getting
Oh yeah.
violins and cellos and all kinds of shit. It's like, what are you, even to me, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? But that's kind of where it's getting me.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you guys are both speaking to and illustrating is when you go out of your comfort zone, when you go against the grain, like some of the very best stuff happens that way. And it's like you talk about Braun like doing Stairway to Heaven, like that's sacred ground. You talk about doing any of these Cornell and Soundgarden songs, like there is a fan base, like the imposter syndrome that lives inside any of us is going to go times 12 just thinking about the idea of covering any of this stuff because the, some of the band folks might hear it. What are the fans going to think? Like you have, before we even get to what you said about having Cornells on either shoulder, you've got so many questions and statements that are flying around in your head as soon as the idea starts percolating. So just the fact that, I think that's kind of an important thing as a creative person. If you could eventually shove all that out of the way and say, this is what we're doing, this is what I want to do, that I believe in it, that's so huge because then we're hearing what we're hearing, which is like you have done something which I think this is very standard to what you do generally. You're not somebody that just goes, all right, we're going to turn into a straight version of this, like people know. It's like, what can I do with this? So I'd love to that end, I would love to hear you talk more about developing your arrangement and approach for this version of Dead Wishes.
Yeah, I mean, the arrangement was very simple. The drum, it started with Kenny. He needed to be Kenny. If anyone knows Kenny, he's a legend. The
For
dude is
sure.
drumming on with everybody and everything. And I just, said, listen, keep it kind of close, add your flair to it. But as far as the skeleton and the groundwork of the song, please keep it kind of the same, especially where the drums kick in. A little bit, about a minute or so into the song and whatnot. Add percussive elements. He did a cool, really cool marimba, hand drum. He did sleigh bell stuff. A lot of percussive elements that to add to it. And that's what, once I heard the sleigh bell and the hand drum and the marimbas and all that stuff he was adding, that's where I kind of went, all right, guitar's got to be static, because the hand drums, the percussion, and then the synth, the keys, and then at the time, I didn't know I was going to add a string section, but these are going to be the elements that make the song different. Angel came in, he killed it with the acoustics and the electric guitars. Then I recorded bass. Normally, I would re record the bass after the drums, but for this one, the guitar, the drums really needed to lay the groundwork. And I did a playing style I'd never really done before on bass, where in the intro, there is no bass in the intro. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to do some cool classical flamenco style bass on the intro, which is what I did, very low in the mix. And then I just kept building from there. The strings were added after the vocals. I heard the song and I heard what Braun delivered. I'm like, this is fucking amazing. And then again, I just heard, man, strings would be fucking cool in the choruses. And I just kind of went for it. Got strings, a few violins and cellos, and I like the mad fucking moron in a room, like, fucking no, right there. just fucking waving hands and shit, not knowing what the fuck I'm doing. But it really came down to that, and just building, building, building to where we got it. And to Bron's credit, I sent him the mix. He had some cool notes on that, which helped develop the mix with the strings. And then from what you hear is just basically building that song from literally the ground up.
That's fantastic. Well, you guys, as you both have detailed, Bron, it's like your mom was a big Cornell fan. Mastodon's done shows with Soundgarden. Kim, as you said, played, on a track on the most recent record. And then, Mark, just, straight off the top of my head, like obviously Kim, like I mentioned, comes in and, plays on The Day I Tried to Live. Pete Thorne was, on the track with Ian Thornley. So you guys have both kind of gotten closer to the source than some in all instances. What have you guys kind of and then Mark, as you laid out, just like working on this whole project in general, all the music that you've done. So you guys have gotten deep with this. What have you guys kind of like come to appreciate about the workings of the Soundgarden and Cornell universe from having a chance to kind of be within it in those various ways?
I don't think King Ultra Mega would exist without Kim and his blessing and his support. When I originally and when we did The Day I Tried to Live, he recorded the guitars for that back in 2020, 2021, somewhere over there. And I sat dormant with it for 4 or 5 years. I was like, I don't know if I want to go down this road. And it was like, I don't fucking question, I'm not comfortable with this. But he's the one kind of poking the bear. Gotta do this, what's going on? Who's gonna sing it? We gotta, I know you, because I previously mentioned to him, Elisa, from Arch Enemy, or formerly of Arch Enemy, and he kept poking the bear with me till we did it. He loved it, and then it kind of not reawoken, but kind of woken it up, going, you know what, people, Kim's really into this, his management's really into this, Ben and Matt are really into this. Vicky Cornell's really into this. If I have their blessing,
Yeah.
I guess I
That's cool.
kind of got the pass to move forward. And and it's humbling that people like Bron and Richie and Joe and all these guys are taking time to do this. Because again, it is for a great cause. It's a charity that means a lot to me, and mental health. And doing anything I can to help means a great deal to me. So yeah,
Yeah.
it's awesome. And I appreciate all these artists come just doing this. It's humbling for sure.
What's common to all this, like what I hear from Bron, what I hear from you, what I heard when I talked to William Duvall, it's kind of cool that in all this music, each of you has kind of found some part of yourself in the process of doing it. Like I know when I talked to William, like it was extremely meaningful for him to do the song that he did. So I think that's, the thing that we should really kind of bang home as we kind of move towards wrapping up here is the support for Music Cares, mental health. Like we all struggle with mental health in one form or another. Bron mentioned suicide. We've all known somebody either in our family or close to us or whatever the case is. Like all this stuff touches all of us. So just the fact that you guys have the opportunity to do the good that you're doing, with this stuff, I mean, it's so important. I'm glad we're at a time where we can talk about all this stuff now and not have it underneath the rug, So I appreciate the extra light that you're shining by doing this stuff, Mark.
Oh, man, it's the least I can do. I mean, I wish I could do more.
Any opportunity to shine a light on the incredible talent that was Chris Cornell, just such an incredible, just the vocals. I mean, when you are tasked with doing a cover with somebody who's as incredible as Chris, where like a stairway, people don't touch it. They're just like, nope, leave that over there because you just don't even want to, you don't even want to attempt it, But you feel like you get to know the person a little bit more by kind of digging into their every little subtle nuance of how they approached the vocals that just kind of poured out of the guy. And like I said, the guy, he could sing anything, any style, and And not only was it recognizable, but he just gave everything to every performance, it seems like. And yeah, any opportunity to shine a light on an incredible artist that we obviously lost too soon, is welcomed. And yeah.
Well, I know you guys are pretty stacked up with stuff, but appreciate the time. Thanks for taking time to talk about this music and congrats as this thing goes out into the world. I think the people are really going to enjoy this, what you guys have done.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We've reached the end of another episode of the UCR podcast. It is Matt Wardlaw. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please rate and review wherever you are listening and hit subscribe so that you'll receive future episodes of the podcast from Ultimate Classic Rock.